Thong Song has it has a mad key change. Have you ever noticed the key change? It's fucking, what is that? Da 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 da, and you're like, what? Yeah, and you're like, what the hell?
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to Sappening Podcast.
Sappening!
Sappening!
You are listening to episode 197 of Sappening Podcast, featuring myself, Sean Smith, and my good friend, Morgan Richards!
Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards, and this episode is a gentle climb as we age against the machine with music, comedy, and ridiculous sentences.
Ah, I see what you've done there. His stand-up show is called Age Against the Machine. This week's guest is comedian, musician, and all-round funny legend, and super, super nice human, the brilliant Josh Weller.
Yes, what a hilarious stand-up comedian, but he likes to call himself a failed musician. He's a retired punk author and apparently obsessed with cheese. But seriously, Josh has had such an insane and unique trajectory in his career. You might recognize him from your local comedy club, TV, or making you cry laughing with various virtual videos, poking fun at the music industry and getting older, or his songwriting before finding himself as a comic. He was signed to a major record label as a solo artist, fronted his punk band, The Kenneths, and pretty much played with everyone in the process. From The Offspring to Mumford & Sons, The Descendants, Stereophonics, Less Than Jake, Florence and the Machine, and even did the legendary US Warped Tour in 2015. Mad. And we're going to talk all about it. His journey, the parallels between music and comedy. And I know this is someone you've admired for a long time, Sean, appreciating his jokes, and have even sent me endless amount of his videos in the past.
Yes, before we even contacted him about coming on, I've been a fan for a good couple of years, and he's hilarious, and I urge you to go and check out his Instagram and watch some of his videos, because they are brilliant. Go and watch his one about the Women's Euros final. It cracked me up. You're not expecting it. It's fucking brilliant. Basically, he's done the fucking trajectory that I've wanted to do all my life. But despite having giant testicles, apparently I just don't have the testicular fortitude to go into doing what he does. He's our first dead guest as well. That was interesting.
Yeah, we'll get into that.
Yeah, but if you're wondering what the fuck I'm talking about, you're going to have to listen on anew, really. Our first dead guest.
Yeah, but we literally get into everything from some real bizarre moments you wouldn't believe if I told you. The curse of punk and emo kids getting older these days, and we all know about that. Hecklers, record deals, influences, ideas behind some of his most famous sketches, and we get an exclusive insight into his research behind the biggest plot hole in the film Taken with Liam Neeson.
Yeah, he's fucking brilliant. I love him. I genuinely love him. If he's listening to this, I'm sorry for that. I just did a bit of a gush. But yeah, he's fucking hilarious. The similarities and parallels between being a comedian and being in a band and his career and my career have been so similar. And yeah, I find it mad that we've both got to do what we got to do. But I feel like he deserves it because he's very, very funny. So yeah, thank you very much, Josh, for coming on. If you're listening to this, nice one. You're going to be sick of us tagging you in stuff all week. But do us a favor, give it a share because it helps all of us.
Yeah, it does. And you can check out everything we post this week and how much we will annoy him at SappeninPod on Twitter and Instagram. And of course, if you enjoy this podcast, you want to help us continue making it each and every week, please go and check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/Sappenin. But without any further ado, this is the hilarious, funny, witty, and comic genius that is Josh Weller on episode 197 of Sappenin Podcast.
197 on the motherfucking mic. I don't know why I did that. Sappenin!
Sappenin!
good week.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Sappenin.
Oh,
yes, a very precise Sappenin there from this week's guest. Comedian, musician, graphic novelist, podcast host, presenter, and our very first guest, who according to the Wikipedia, is dead.
Yeah. I'd like to point out that I do all of those things badly. Like, it sounds like, that sounds like I'm sort of I'm like an entrepreneur. Like I'm a failed musician. My comic book sold like 9 copies. My podcast is about Formula One. It's so fucking niche, and I've only been a comedian for 3 years. So I mean, thank you for the intro.
And apparently, you're not really dead because we can see you unless you're haunting us. So I'm not sure what's going on there.
It's what it is that I just find it mad that Wikipedia is so weird that I just have a Wikipedia page and I can't delete it. So I just keep updating it in saying I've died in different ways.
Yeah. What was the last way you died then? What was this? What happened to me first?
The most recent one is, in mysterious circumstances with a Hereford cattle and a waffle iron. But the thing is there's lots of people called Josh Weller who've died. So, you know, you have to provide like a source. I just keep adding other Josh Weller's obituaries. So technically it's factually correct.
Yeah. Well, there's a dead Josh Weller.
I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
You know, how, if you were to die via a waffle iron though, how would you think you would go?
I wouldn't want to be burned by it. I'd want to be smashed over the head with it. Get it over quickly.
Yeah, bludgeoned. Definitely bludgeoned over burning, I think.
Surely.
Apart from being dead on the internet, how is things going with you day to day, man? How's life at the moment?
It's good. Very good. Yeah. I've just been gigging every night. So I've just been doing stand up. You know, we're very lucky as comedians. You know, I was a musician all my 20s and early 30s. And like, we were very lucky that comedy clubs opens probably a year before music venues. When did gigs start back up? It was this year, really, wasn't it? Like full capacity shows.
Yeah, I think so. We did the Download pilot in 2021, but that was very, what the fuck's going on? Can I go near people? Are we allowed to mosh?
I remember going to a gig in August, and then there was a lockdown again. I think shows really started towards the end of the year, and then fall back up again this year. So, but yeah, it seems like comedy was right on the ball with that, and the kind of those seating gigs as well.
Yeah, I mean, some of those outdoor gigs. When I die, I hope none of those gigs flash before my eyes. They were just like comics were doing gigs in car parks to cars and stuff. And if you did a good joke, they would toot their horn, and which is a really horrible way to find out you're not having a good show or that you're not funny. It's just cars not honking at you.
Yeah, 500 sets of fucking headlights blaring at you, not a single fucking noise. Oh my god, that'd be dreadful. Oh, not even a rev. Get off! Get off!
I did one theatre when everything was sort of opening up, but still, you know, the venues weren't at capacity, and it was a theatre. It's like 500 seats, and I got there, and the promoter was like, "Ah, the gig sold out." And I walked out, and there was like 15 people in there because it was all they were allowed. Yeah,
it was socially distant. Yeah,
yeah.
The fucking four corners of the seating. Oh, yeah. Well, Josh, I wanted to talk about music and comedy, and and how did you go from one to the other? Really. So, yeah, if we could talk a little bit about your musical background and what happened and what led to your comedy career and you being very, very funny on the internet.
Well, I grew up in Norwich, and.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, mate. Do you know what's great about Norwich is when you enter, you know, when you enter any city, it's like you are now entering and it has like a slogan for the city. The official slogan for Norwich is a fine city.
It's just fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Norwich. It'll do.
Like they must know by now that word has two meanings. It has the old fashioned term. Like she was a fine lady. But it also means it's fucking okay. It's okay.
Yeah. Norwich, at best. Yeah.
It should, the sign should say Norwich, a solid six. I grew up in Norwich playing in punk bands. I was in a band called the Opposable Thumbs. My
I fucking love a punk band name, the Opposable Thumbs.
Okay. And we went to see. So how old were we? It was when Less Than Jake released Borders and Boundaries. So 2000. I remember because we threw a demo tape at them, cassette tape.
Wow, nice.
And. And then I started another band called Your Loss, which went for a few years. And then I left that, and emo and punk and all that stuff kind of, I just sort of lost interest in it. I was like 16. I was a kid. I was a child. And then I started making solo music, and then moved to London when I was 18. And, I got signed to Universal, when I was 23, and I got dropped by Universal when I was 23.
Yeah, how did that come about? How did the... Was this with the Kennets?
No, this was before the Kennets. I was a solo artist. And I moved to London and I just did every open mic. I did every... Much like comedy is you climb up the ladder by pulling your socks up and working your ass off. And I did so many gigs. And those gigs became... I had an acoustic guitar and I would like stamp on a tambourine and I had this stupid haircut, like 2 foot high. I don't know what I was thinking. I think it's because I moved out of a city where if Norfolk's quite a backwards, inbred, racist place, and that's being nice about it.
And, yeah. Oh, Merthyr Tydfil, that's where I'm from. Yes, yeah, exactly the same. Yeah.
And I think I just went overboard. I think when you move to London, you're so anonymous and no one gives a shit what you look like or what you dress like. And like any good city or any good place. And I just went mad and wore like a bow tie and tweed jacket and spray painted my, hairsprayed my hair like 2 foot up in the air, like a sort of mixed race Marge Simpson. And and just gigged all the time. And eventually I got a manager who was actually just a Coke dealer. And then I got another manager who, was a nice guy, and he worked really hard for me, and all the record labels in England turned me down, and then we finally signed a deal in France, and that took like 3 or 4 years of intense gigging and writing songs, and it sort of went downhill from there. I got made an album that wasn't very good, and got a bit screwed over by the producer. Contractually, they found like a little loophole in the contract, and then it charged me extra money after we recorded it for mixes and stuff. So like all the classic stories. And then moved to another manager who managed loads of pop artists, and they really tried to turn me into a pop star. And I again, the combination of didn't enjoy it and just wasn't good enough. I remember them saying, like, there were these big Swedish men, and they were like, you're going to be like Bruno Mars. And I remember just thinking, he's so talented. Like, he's a drummer, like, and a sick musician in every aspect. I can barely sing in 2 octaves. like, really hit 1 octave. Quit. And then I went and worked in a toy shop for like 4 years. And then all I've ever really listened to, really everything's come back to punk rock for me, and Descendants and stuff like that. And then I started this punk band while I was working in a toy shop. And purely by chance, one of my buddies knew Kevin Lyman, who ran the Vans Warped Tour.
Mm.
And he sent him out a demo, just a fucking demo. And then we got asked to go on the Warped Tour. It was within like 4 months of starting the band. And this was 2015, end of 2014. And the punk band, we signed to an American manager. She managed like Rise Against and Anti-Flag and stuff like that. And then we did the Warped Tour, and then then things kind of started building momentum. Like, we made a record with Bill Stevenson, who's, you know, Descendants drummer, songwriter, punk legend. Like, I mean, I have a Descendants tattoo, so.
Nice. You had it prior to that?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. It wasn't like, it's like me getting it. Yeah. It's like me getting an A tattoo because I worked with Jason Perry on an album. Do you know what? I fucking like A now. I've decided it's taken this long. Nothing has been out for 25 years, but go on. I'm going to fucking have an A tattoo. But yeah. All right. Yeah. Good.
So funny.
Yeah. So yeah, that must have been, it coming full circle. That must have been a fucking dream for you.
Yeah. It's, and like Bill is like, I mean, that's a mad thing to process when, like, Bill Stevenson starts emailing you. And, like, he was sending us, like, voice notes of song ideas. And I've still got them in my email. Like, I listen to them probably a couple of times a year. Just be like, I should really finish these, because some of the ideas he sent us were really good. Yeah, that was an amazing experience. And, we got to open for the Descendants a couple of times, I think. And but it just didn't, the record just didn't connect. It just didn't. I think that we thought that the fan base was younger than it was, and we were going out on tour with a lot, you know, like As It Is, and a lot of young. I mean, they're not. I mean, everyone's 30 now. I mean, when we started, I was older than them when we started, but I remember being like, "These guys are kids," and now we're just all old men. Like, we're just all grown ups. But
elder emo now, the worst fucking term of all time, elder emo.
And it must be so hard to. I mean, to write a song when you're 17 that's like, I got grounded by my parents, and then you have to go out at 30 and do it.
You're still singing it.
Which is not, sorry, that's not me casting aspersions on As It Is. I think they're great guys.
Oh, no, much love for them on here.
Yeah, much love. Yeah. And but we did Warped Tour with that. And, like, you know, we were kind of going out with all those types of bands, Boston Manor and I mean, the most fun ones were like when it was like Anti-Flag, Descendants. Those were the tours that I was like, oh, this is the right audience. Like older, divorced dads. Yeah, basically.
Yeah. Angry at the world because their relationship didn't work out.
Yeah, exactly.
I haven't had a wash for months. I haven't had a fucking wash for months. Come on. Like
I remember we actually ended up touring with Less Than Jake, which was fun for like the 14-year-old in me. It was pretty cool because like they were my heroes. I don't think they spoke to us the whole tour, but when I was 14, I loved them. but I get it. This is the thing. It's like, they weren't being dicks. They're like 45 years. It's their job. Like they can't make friends with every support band. Like, they just have to go out and fill those rooms and make enough bank to pay their mortgages. Like that's, you know, that I would judge them more if they wanted to get drunk every night. I think that they just were like, let's just play the shows. And they kept joking. It was quite funny. They kept joking on stage every night that we paid them like an extortionate amount of money to open for them. Yeah, no, he was just fucking around. It wasn't, I don't think it was ill, you know, he didn't mean it maliciously. We ended up going on the road with them and I just remember their audience, like those ska punk people I have a photo that I keep meaning to blow up and get printed, which is from the back of the stage. It's me, the Oxford Academy, and I've got my leg on a monitor and I'm like giving it the whole punk rock thing and it's just 500 people bored out of their minds.
We need to see this photo.
I'll send it to you. Yeah,
please do. That should be the backdrop of your comedy gigs from now on. You should just put that there.
Like a Renaissance painting.
Yeah,
it's just everyone is like, what? Just we want to have a skank. We want a skank. Just shut up.
Listen, I've got a fucking babysitter for tonight. I've paid £7 for parking. I just want a skank in these 3/4-length shorts I've got on. Come on, these dreads are not going to grow themselves. Spit in my ear.
Exactly.
I attack Scar every week on this podcast, so I've enjoyed this.
Yeah, but really, when you look back at your career, it's been such a journey and trajectory with having all those mad experiences as a musician, especially coming from that kind of background of being a diehard music fan, to go into comedy and all the things you've done there and everything. I mean, when you get a chance to look back, is it just kind of wild to see all the things you have managed to do in different avenues?
Some of the things, it's more looking back and going, and I had a similar experience last week that I can't really, I did a gig with I got to open for one of my heroes and like, there's a video of it and I can't really bring myself to watch it.
Okay.
Cause
is this the Fred Armisen show that you did?
Yeah. Like I'm such a big Fred Armisen fan and I just got this DM from him 3 hours before the gig that was like, oh, I love your videos. Do you want to come and open?
What?
How do you process that?
That's fucking mental.
And then he made me go on in the mid, not made me, he asked me to go on in the middle of the show as well. His current show, I think it's called Comedy for Musicians, but if you're not, that's okay. I think that's the name of his tour. And he does half an hour with guitar and then half an hour like with drums. And he's also from a punk, he was in a band called Trench Mouth, who were like, you know, punk rock band, I think late 80s, early 90s, which also didn't do as well as he wanted. So we kind of bonded quite a lot over this, our failed punk backgrounds. But it was, mate, I had to open and close for Fred Armisen. Like, it was fucking intimidating.
Yeah. But how did it go? Did it go well?
Oh, man, it was so good. Yeah, it went so, so, so well. But things like that, you know, it's more looking back and going, like, I remember I mimed drums for Ray Davies at the Raw Variety. Like, that's like, it doesn't feel like it happened. It's like, that's such a weird sentence.
Yeah, I was just about to say, you keep saying the fucking strangest sentences I've ever heard. How did that come about?
I was Depp on, which any non-musicians, it's like I would, when the guitarist couldn't do the gig, I would do the gig for Paloma Faith, who I knew when her first album came out. I say depth guitar. What I would do is, if it was a mime gig, because I wasn't good enough at guitar to actually play the guitar that the guitarist would play. So when there was a mime gig, he was like, no, I can't really be bothered. So I'd get like 300 quid to go and mime on like David Dickinson's show or it's on the internet somewhere.
David fucking Dickinson. That's the first mention of David Dickinson ever on this podcast. Yeah. And I'm fucking so glad. Yeah. Yeah, but why is he turning down a £300 gig? That's what... Was he not getting paid the £300? Or were you only getting paid the £300 if...
I would get paid 300 quid to fill in for him. And then the Raw Variety was... This is what happened. So, when you mime drums, so I could play drums a little bit. So I stayed up the whole night before like learning, because I hate when you watch a drummer miming and the fills are like, tell that the drum fills aren't fake, or you could tell they're not a drummer. So I learned the fills like properly, so it would look real on telly. And you, when you mime drums, they put these pads on the drums so that the drums don't make any noise. And they put two cymbals on top of each other so that they don't like wash when they don't make a noise when you hit them. And I went up and we sound checked, and then the stage curtain was down, and Michael McIntyre was introducing. It was Ray Davies and Paloma Faith, and Michael McIntyre was like, oh, no, blah, 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 and he introduced, and the curtain started coming up, and I hit the snare drum, and Kylie Minogue, who was on before, her drummer didn't have any drum pads, so he stole mine. And like put them on his kit, and I could see two things. I could see his kit being wheeled off out of the building with my drum pads on it, and I could see him looking at me laughing. What?
That's what's going on. No, yeah.
And he sort of did this, I don't know, like this gesture. His hands went up his shoulders. He was like, oh, like a Larry David. Uh-oh. Like, yeah. And I ran like as fast as I could. The curtain's coming up, and I ran. And I grabbed the drum pads, I ran back to the drum kit, and I threw them on like pancakes. I threw them onto the drums. And thank fuck, Michael McIntyre fluffed the intro. So they had to put the curtains back down and reintroduce the acts. And like, it wouldn't matter if they fired me because it wasn't my job, but they would have had to reshoot it because I was running to the drum kit as the curtain came up.
It would have been better if they just left all that in, though. I mean, that would have been great, great effect for it. But that's what I mean, man. Like, you're saying so many mad sentences that people listening to this won't be able to comprehend of stuff that, you know, that you just imagine would be life-hold stories that you would tell people forever. So you have done so many stuff in all those different avenues. But like, what was the moment really that you decided, like, after music wasn't like the right fit for you to maybe go and start comedy? Because I imagine music's quite a funny medium anyway, and being on stage for all those years really helped with that.
Yeah, it was during the Kenneths, which was my band, punk band. I've known Leanne Le Havas since we were like 18, because when we were doing open mics in London together, we met, and she obviously, for anyone listening who doesn't know who she is, she's the sort of modern, I'm reluctant to call her a soul singer because it's more progressive than that. But she's huge. When she did the Royal Albert Hall, she asked us to open for her, like as a punk band. And everyone told us not to do it. Like our manager, our booking agent, her booking agent was like, do an acoustic set. I was like, it's punk. Like, no. And I called Leanne and was like, maybe we shouldn't do it. And Leanne went, no, fuck it. Like they keep trying to get, because whenever, you know, when you do a, when you're an artist of her level, everyone tries to suggest bands or artists to support you on tour. And I think she felt like everyone that they were suggesting was like, kind of like a carbon copy of her, or like, you know, like just sort of, it didn't really fit for her. And she wanted, I think she just wanted to piss everyone off. So she asked us to open. The bands, we talked about it, and they tried to put us off in many ways. They charged us, you know, we had to pay like a lot of money to use their sound man, which is kind of standard practice when you're in a band. And they paid us to do the Royal Albert Hall. We got paid 150 quid. So we lost so much money doing it. And I still have the email from the booking from CAA somewhere that says, can we get £1,000 to cover our van? And he emailed back going, do you know how many people want to do this gig? It's like the response that we got.
Which I would reply going, yeah, but I am doing the gig.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Where's that fucking £1,000? Not bad.
But we did. This is why bands rely on merch so much. Just because when we played the Royal Albert Hall, we were so lucky to sell one t-shirt. So fucking one t-shirt.
I've done that myself. Yeah, my former band, we got offered to go and do 5 dates with Linkin Park in places they never played. So it was like Latvia, Lithuania. We played their first ever Greece show, which was 18,000 people turning up to your first ever show in Greece. So we were like, right there, we play it. We worked out we were playing to 150,000 people in these like 5 or 6 dates we had with them. So we got like 500 t-shirts printed at least. And we were like, look, we need to keep on this. So we're going to do 500 every night. We'll just get more printed the next day and all this shit. We sold one. No. The whole tour, we sold 14 t-shirts, right? 150,000 people, 14 t-shirts sold. In Lithuania, we sold one t-shirt and we had a price match with Linkin Park. Because for anybody who doesn't know, if you're a support band, you've normally got a price match with the headliner. So we sold a t-shirt, right, which was the equivalent of the standard week's wage in Latvia. And we were like, if we find this guy, he can come to any of our shows forever for free. Because the fact that he came to see Linkin Park and he went, that load of Welsh fucking twats, I quite like him. I'm going to get one t-shirt for a week's fucking wage. That's fucking unbelievable.
Price matching is like, just to go on record here, like, can big bands just stop trying to fuck small bands? It is such an insecure dick move that you're worried that the support band's going to sell more merch than you. So you make them sell a t-shirt for £40. Yeah. It is like the merch is it's the lifeblood of every touring up and coming, even bands who are at a level where they're playing like Kentish Town Forum. Even if you're selling like 3,000 tickets a night, you need merch. And it blows my mind. We've had to price match with certain bands and like, it just made me hate them. It's like, why do we have to do this? You guys have a house, like you guys own property and cars and like, you know what I mean? Probably some of you have a second home. Like, I have 3 pairs of socks. Like, let me. Blows my mind. But anyway, your question. You said, anyway, we went on stage at the Royal Albert Hall, and I remember walking on stage going, I was thinking as I walked on stage going, oh man, I can't wait to tell some jokes in between the songs. And that was the moment when I was like, oh shit, I need to quit music.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, if that's the case, I should have fucking done that about 15 years. I should have fucking quit music about 15 years ago, because that's all I look forward to now is fucking having a laugh in between songs.
But that's what I mean, though. There's so many elements of music where if you took them out of context are just funny and ridiculous anyway. Like, I know online you do loads of kind of parody videos of looking at songs or how mid-sized bands announce tours.
That's
or
my favourite.
They're supporting Stained and Hooverstank across Europe.
Yeah, the use of Stained and Alien Ant Farm at the Crawford Arms was fucking genius. It had me in fucking tears when I watched that. That's brilliant.
I think we did open for Alien Ant Farm.
Like, of course you did.
I think the way to process trauma is to confront it.
I'd love to see Aaron Lewis in the Crawford Arms now, because he'd fucking hate it like the fucking daft racist.
But there must be so many moments like that where you were just at the time thinking, to anyone else, this sounds like a parody. It sounds stupid.
I mean, at the time, it was like, you just think that, to be fair, like every band that we open with, I am incredibly grateful. Like, I'm not taking the piss out of any of those acts. I mean, I am, but I'm not doing it in a way that it comes from a place of love. Like, I still think Binoir by Stain is a...
unbelievable.
It's
a banger.
Yeah.
I know I made a joke about Less Than Jake, but that's not how I like, it's not a joke. I just said we support them. I did support them. So for me, for the joke to be as true as possible, it was made sense to pull from what was real. And Alien Ant Farm as well. Like, I own all of those bands' albums, and they were Less Than Jake was my first gig. So when we were doing it, I was so grateful to be doing it. It's like that was like bucket list stuff. Like even, you know, we opened for The Offspring. That's a band that like I worship. I still love Smash, you know. When you're doing it, you kind of just think, well, you know, this will lead to the next thing. This will open the next door. And then some of them was like, I remember we were opening for the Dead Kennedys, and we were doing we were meant to do their European tour. And obviously it was Dead Kennedys without the frontman, but about 2 weeks before the tour, they emailed us going, cool guys. So, and it was like, I think we were getting 50 quid a gig. So it's like, obviously you're losing money, but we figured we'd put all of our gear in the back of a car, do the whole car tour. So we don't have to rent a vehicle, save loads of money, and we'll just use their backline, which was as expected when you're opening for a band in small rooms. But they emailed us 2 weeks before the tour. And we're like, okay guys, so, we're going to need to use your backline. Backline is amps, drum kits is what that is, and we were like, no, we're the opening band. And they were like, yeah, but they were doing the same thing we were doing. They were like, yeah, but we're trying to save money. And we were like, yeah, but we need to save money more than you do.
Yeah, we're gonna pick less than less, you fucking maniacs.
We're not the Dead Kennedys. So we didn't do the tour. We couldn't do it.
Yeah. Oh wow, that's crazy. That's crazy. But like looking at moments supporting The Offspring, for example, or Warped Tour and things like that, is there anyone you've met across the way where you really kind of wouldn't expect it, and you're like, your teenage self would be really like flabbergasted that you had those kind of opportunities to be like performing or in the same room as some of your idols?
I think all of them, in a way. It's so many of those people shaped my childhood. Bill, obviously Descendants, you know, Milo, and the fact that I know them is still odd to me. What's been really, really, nice is seeing those people and those musicians and bands that we toured with, who maybe even bands that I got a message last week from, See, to me, and this is just my stupidity, but a lot of those punk band or those emo bands, like we came as Romans and Memphis Mayfire, and to me they're all the same band. I don't know which ones are which. It's like for me, like Stone Roses and who are the other ones from that era?
Happy Mondays.
They're the same band. They're the yeah, same 100%. Band to me.
Yeah, 100%, yeah, 100%, yeah.
One, they both have a song that goes ba-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. I don't know which one it is. One band that we actually did Warped Tour with, whose name I can't remember, the bassist like DM'd me being like, oh, I'm such a big fan of your comedy stuff. And I was like, oh yeah, well, I think we toured with you. And that's been amazing for me, is like seeing people who I either idolized growing up or kind of was connected to musically kind of start enjoying my comedy. And I think it shouldn't be gratifying, because I think that probably speaks volumes about my insecurities. It's a really, really nice feeling, man, to have those people you grew up listening to and to have them think that you're funny. It's fucking mind blowing.
Who's some of your like comedy heroes? Who did you what got you into comedy then? Like was there someone you saw, or is it like, do you remember, like for me, like I first got into comedy through watching stuff like my parents used to watch, like Jasper Carrot, Dave Allen, and stuff
Jethro.
Like that. And then Jethro. Oh Jesus Christ, Jethro. I forgot about him. He's died recently, haven't he? R.I.P.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
But all of that stuff. Yeah, that kind of got me into comedy. Was there anything like that for you? Or
I mean, I was lucky that because I, you know, my mum's black and my dad's white, and I don't know why I heard that. I know what color he is.
You also said white with a bit more vitriol than you did black. Is that what I noticed? You went, my mum's black and my dad's white.
Yeah, he's painfully white. He's so white. He's never seasoned any food in his fucking life.
Okay.
He can't dance. He's never danced.
Oh, my God. He is so... It's just a line of loafers as you walk into his dumb white house.
You know?
He's just gonna kill us on 24/7 in the house. That's it. Oh, fucking brilliant.
And my dad is the kind of guy, my dad is the kind of guy who'd be like, you know, the Jam were good, but I think the Style Council were better. And you're like, Dad, you're just, you're empirically wrong.
Yeah. Wings, only the band the Beatles could have.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, yeah. My dad is, and God love him, he's Partridge, isn't he? But,
yeah.
And,
fucking brilliant.
But I've forgotten the question. What was the question?
Comedy. Walk are you into?
Oh, yeah, I was lucky that I had those two different cultures. So on I remember watching Chris Rock my mum wasn't watching Chris Rock. It was just on when I was a kid. And Richard Pryor, I remember watching with my mum. Lenny Henry, I remember watching with my mum. And I remember seeing my dad like pissing himself at Steve Martin and Billy Connolly. And I remember seeing my mum laughing at Chris Rock and Richard Pryor. But neither of them, I mean, they're divorced now, so it makes sense, but they didn't like the other person's comedy.
Okay.
Never the two shall meet comedy wise.
Yeah. Yeah. And, it was, it's weird because my parents are two people who they're not like arty, you know, thick rimmed glasses who go to art galleries. They're just, my mum works in a supermarket. My dad was in the Air Force. Like, they're normal people. But accidentally, at points, they have stumbled upon, like, having really good taste in certain things. And really broad taste as well. Music and what they found funny and what movie. And also, they just let me watch when I was, like, 7 years old, I was watching movies that I should not have been watching. And that as well, like, being, like, 7 or 6 when I watch Wayne's World or something. And, like, just having your... I played my niece and nephew 2 weeks ago. I played them Eiffel 65 Blue, and they'd never heard.
What? Yeah,
because you know, they're 6 and 4, and they never ever heard the song. And I showed them it, and they were like, they made this face that was like, "This isn't Encanto. Like, what are you?" And then 2 weeks later, my sister, like the other day, she sent me a video and they know all the words. They weren't even singing along to the song. They just know all in the back of the car, a cappella. They were going, "Now this is a story." Like, they just knew about a man who lives, and they knew all of it. And I was thinking, wow, that's amazing. But then I realized, like, they're 6. Like, they know like 3 songs. It's really easy for them to learn all the lyrics because their brain is empty. Their brain's got nothing in it. So they can. And I think that for me, like, I just sucked up like Dirty Rotten Scoundrels by Steve Martin and Wayne's World and like all that stand-up when I was a kid, like, it just lived in me. And really, when I think about being a musician, like, all I was doing in the studio was trying to make people laugh. I wasn't trying to be a good musician. I should have realized much sooner that I should have been a comedian.
Well, hearing all this, I've just like, me and you are so similar, it's insane. To the point where it's just made me sad in my heart to realize that, yeah, I should have been having a bash of the comedy a bit earlier than me now saying, oh, I'm going to do it, but I never fucking get around to doing it. But yeah.
Yeah, but that's the good thing about stand-up is, like, how old are you?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
38?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Like, it's the difference with stand-up is that there's a shelf life to being a musician, sadly. And there shouldn't be, because in the 80s, the biggest pop stars in the world were fucking like Phil Collins and Tina Turner. Mm. Like, a black woman in her 40s and a divorced dad. Like, it shouldn't.
Yeah.
You know what? You know Phil Collins, you look at him, you know he owns more than one samurai sword. You know?
Yeah. He has that look. He does have that look.
And oh, like, I'd love to see his collection.
That's, and music is in a position now where, like, if you, I remember turning 26 and being like, oh no, I'm too old for music. And in comedy, it's different because age adds validity, it adds experience, it adds failure, it adds, people want it. Like, I see it every night where, you know, you see like 23-year-old comics and they'll come, some of them will come off stage and be like, ah, I don't know why they don't like me. And I'm like, it's because you're 23. It's like, you're going to be great. You've got, by the time you're my age, you'll have been doing comedy for, you know, 10 years. You're going to be, you'll have all that experience, but no one gives a shit what a 23-year-old has to say about the world because they don't fucking know. There's a lot. Yeah, I may just start doing stand-up. You'll be fine.
Yes!
Would you say that, especially growing older, doing comedy, that different experiences really helps with material as well?
Yeah. Hell yeah. And I, when I started doing comedy, I was like, I'm not going to talk about music. I'm not. I don't want to. I want to learn, and I'm not going to play anything on stage because I think that punk in me was like the most punk rock thing to do is have a microphone and just eat my balls for as many years as it takes. And once I'm good enough at comedy with just a microphone, then I can start introducing other aspects, different mediums that I can add to my experience and ability. And I'm still not. I don't play any instruments on stage. I have a couple of backing tracks, but that's only because I play my first single in my show. That is a show I'm working on. It's not finished, but I play the actual first song I ever released because it's so bad.
Can we find it online? Is it online already?
I mean, it's probably somewhere lurking in the dark crevices of iTunes.
Oh, well, someone listening to this will find it, that's for sure. They love opening Counterworms.
I started talking about music on stage purely from the guidance of other comedians. They were like, a couple of comedians said that I'm the only comedian that has a failed music career. They got a record deal that, like, you know, and that to not draw from that is mad.
Mm.
And I have been, and I'm so glad I did because it led to things like Fred Armisen, you know, it led to people like that finding out who I am. So I'm really glad that I talk about it as well. So,
yeah, it's nice to have that different mixture of perspectives as well, that you can go and talk about those things when you need to, but that's not your gimmick. It's not your one trip pony. Like some people do use things like that as an advantage. So saying that, is there any memorable heckles or anything from crowds that stand out from you? Because I'm sure you've had a few over your time in stand-up.
In the first heckle I ever got in music was, or the one that lives in my soul, was I was opening for the Maccabees at the Leeds Cockpit, rest in peace. About four songs in, someone shouted that my flies were undone. That was one I remember. But the other ones, with stand-up, I've been very lucky and I sort of jumped up the ladder quite quickly. And at certain points, you will do a gig and you realize that you're just not ready. And I did this gig in, I can't remember. I do remember. I'm not going to say where it was. And but they haven't had me back. And I was only about 4 months in. I was only about 4 months in and I went up and I opened for like Jack Whitehall and I was just shit. I was just bad. And someone shouted, tell a joke about a minute in. And that was, but that's, you know, it's all good, that stuff. They were right. I wasn't being funny. And either you walk away from it and you cry in a corner or you analyze what happened and why you failed and why you got to that point and you kind of, you learn from it. So every heckle is, not every heckle. This is the other thing as well. I think because YouTube and Reels and because the thing is comedians don't want to burn their material by putting it online. So a lot of them post their crowd work. And what that's done is it's sort of facilitated this culture where people think when they go to a comedy show, they're part of the fucking show.
Mm.
And they're not. Shut up.
Yeah. If you're listening to this and you're thinking about going to a comedy gig lately, sit down and shut the fuck up.
It's rhetorical. You're not. Don't heckle people. But then you get better from it as well. So it is one of those relationships where you don't want people to, but actually the best place to be is fine with it. You know, which took some time to get there, but bring it on. It's fine.
Nice. That's a good attitude to have, really. But Josh, as we start to wind down here, one of the other things I wanted to just bring up with you quickly is the fact that you're a very strong believer that the plot in Taken is completely wrong and a teenage girl would never follow you two around
Europe.
Which
she wouldn't, would she? She fucking wouldn't. And I'm with you on this. Nobody under 25 likes you two. Fact.
I made a whole fake documentary about it. And I tried to contact the director in the movie studio. And I put it out on Christmas Eve and it went like madly. And I think just because everyone was at home and we spent ages. I did it with Claire House, who's another stand-up. She's brilliant. And she said, she was like, you know, we should do it like those Jonathan Frakes 90s things where he's like, we faked the whole thing. We should make like a real documentary. And we're working on the next one at the minute, which I don't want to say what it's going to be about, but the Taken one was, the idea was that I didn't believe that basically the movie Taken exists because of U2, because the girl was following U2 around on tour. And she was like 18 and it's like 2005. Yeah. It was like 2007. It was like, don't bullshit me. Like that's bad writing. Whoever came up with that. And like, I can't say what he said because I was sworn to secrecy, but I've never said this publicly, but I got an email from Liam Neeson. He saw it.
You fucking kidding me?
No. And an actor who was in a movie with him, and again, like I'm sworn to see, I was told specifically not to tweet the responses, but like I got an email from Liam Neeson explaining why it was you too in the movie. But also the one thing I can say is that the email I got from Liam Neeson, he used a lot of emojis, which was very cute.
What?
It was so cute.
So, you for real have had an email
from
Liam?
Yeah, 100% on my mother's life. Yeah, I got it.
Wow.
It's Liam Neeson. Yeah. It's Liam Neeson at gmail.com at 100%.
Yeah.
Liam Neeson 69 at gmail.com.
Rob Roy 17 at yahoo.com.
What? I want to know what emojis he used. Like
laughing, hilarious face, crying face.
Oh, good. As long as you didn't do angry. Yeah, he's just even loads of angry ones.
One of the best things. It was, and I got it on Christmas Eve as well. So, like,
oh, what a present! What a present!
And someone who was in a movie with him who follows me on Twitter was like, DM me and was like, "What's your email address?" And he sent it to Liam Neeson. And Liam Neeson responded with an answer, but he did say, please don't tweet it. So I was like, all right, fine. So I've got to take it to my grave. And it's so annoying because I could have done a whole follow-up with, you know, about his response, but I can't. It's really heartbreaking, but I will respect Liam Neeson's privacy.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
Because if you don't...
Mental.
He knows. Yeah, he will find you.
He does have a particular set of skills. Emojis. Yeah, he's very good at doing emojis. Unbelievable.
Well, Josh, thank you so much for taking the time for all this, mate. We've had a really good laugh, and it's just been great to hear your insight into everything. And before you go, though, please let us know of anything you'd like to plug, any stand-up gigs, tours, where people can check out material. Please put anything you'd like out there.
My Instagram is where all the live dates and all my videos, obviously, which is just Josh Weller. Oh, I think it's at Josh Weller, Josh Weller. And then I gig every night. It's all the time. So just come if anyone wants to. And then my podcast, which is, the biggest unofficial Formula One podcast. It's so niche. Formula One is such a dumb sport, but I love it. And it's so easy to make. I think that it's really the only Formula One podcast where we're really taking the piss out of how stupid that sport is. And but from a place of love, I think. But yeah, it's called Dirty Air, and it's out every Monday. So that's it, man.
Cool. Nice. Sweet. Awesome.
Well, yeah, thank you very much. Oh, no, before you go, this piss-in gif, this gif of you peeing that's on the internet, how did that come about? And do you have any idea how many times it's been used?
It was a friend of mine, he works at Giphy, and he was like, hey, do you want to come in and make some gifs? And I was like, no, not really. And I went in and we had a couple of beers, and he's got the studio set up, and we were having a couple of drinks, and I was like, all right, fine, let's make some gifs. And we did a bunch, but like some of them have had like, they've been used like 10 million times now or something mad. There's one of me pretending I need a piss. It's not of me pissing for the record.
Yeah. For anybody who was looking for that after.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And then there was one of me giving the finger, but that got taken down, but that got millions. And then there's another one of me dancing, and it got, and yeah, so I'm like, and all these famous people keep using this gif of me. The gif's more successful than me. The gif is more successful.
It's a shame you can't get paid for play on gifts, really.
It's insane, isn't it? Yeah, I know. Hashtag, let's start a hashtag.
We should. But at least you can live forever in gif form, I suppose.
How depressing is that?
on your tombstone, just have the gif.
Ooh, busted for piss.
Yeah. Oh, really, no, but thank you so much, mate. It's been great having you on, and I'm sure we'll catch you at a show soon or something.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. I'll let you know when I'm in... Where are you in Wales?
Wait, well, yeah, if you're just anywhere in South Wales, just let us know.
Cardiff, okay. Mainly is easier. But.
Okay, yeah. Cool. All right, we'll do. All right, awesome. Thanks, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to Sappy Podcast! Yay! Woo! Lots and lots of fun there with the hilarious Josh Weller. Go and check him out on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Yeah, he's got TikTok. Go and check his TikTok out. That's very funny. And his Instagram reels are hilarious because they're merely his TikTok. So I just kept talking for absolutely no reason. But he's very funny. So go and fucking check it out.
Yeah, we appreciate him coming in and giving us a kind of different insight into just the parallels between music and comedy and just such an insane career. I've noticed that a lot of other kind of bands and musicians and people in the industry find his stuff really funny. Share it, and I think that's a great insight into how on the nose he is with this stuff in from kind of the behind the scenes perspective.
Well, yeah, he's very much like, he's a modern day Spinal Tap in a way. So whereas Spinal Tap, if you go and watch Spinal Tap, right, the film Spinal Tap, it's so much like being in a band, right? Bands fucking love, people in bands love it because it reminds them of the shit they've done. So there's a scene in Spinal Tap where they get lost under the venue on the way to the stage. That's happened to us, right? That happened to the Blackout back in the day. One time we got lost in a lift and we didn't know what floor we had to get off to fucking go and play the gig. And we ended up in the kitchen, right? Yeah. So if you go and watch Josh Weller's, you will see the behind the scenes of what goes on with bands and stuff. He's got a brilliant one about the first time DJ scratching was ever put on a song, and it's fucking, because that's how we must have gone. Like, somebody went, oh, there's a gap there, should we put some of that DJ scratch, what, from hip hop? Yeah. But yes, go and check Josh Weller out, he's fucking hilarious. I love all of his videos. It's so parallel to being in a modern band, it's fucking nuts.
There's one bit I really enjoy as well, where he's talking about mid-sized bands announcing support tours and stuff. And at the
Crawford
end, it's like,
Arms. Yeah, Crawford Arms, Alien Ant Farm.
And at the end, he's like, become a platinum member and come and watch us after the show, get paid £45 by an angry promoter.
He's fucking brilliant. Definitely go give him a follow. Tell him Sappening Podcast fucking sent you. And that will probably just anger him.
Yeah, we like to make people angry, kind of, in a way. But this podcast is all about sharing people's stories, perspective, and insights into different aspects of music and the things we love. So if you have any suggestions of different kind of people you want to hear on the podcast in the future, let us know at Sappening Pod on Twitter and Instagram.
And TikTok.
There's a lot of mention of The Offspring in this episode. There, we had him on last year for a chat on episode 131.
We did. Oh, yeah. If you haven't listened to our Offspring episode, right? Let's just say we asked him a question that I know they've never been asked before, right? That stumped them to the point where they had to look up what I was talking about. So go yeah. and check that out because it was fucking brilliant and funny.
Yes, it's totally worth it. But there was some interesting news this week, Sean, that I wanted to bring up. The Offspring are going to be headlining Slam Dunk Festival 2023 in the UK next summer.
Or are they now?
They are. All right. But there was another band on that announcement that...
Is it mine?
No, sadly. Even though people were speculating that.
I know what it was. After last week's episode, Slam Dunk's done the right thing and they've got Rage Against the Machine. Yes! Finally! We're going to get up to this fucking energy crisis slump. Come on, Zach! Get a fucking leg healed by me!
It was a different surprise instead. And one I wasn't aware of and kind of low-key annoyed that we didn't know about it before it was announced.
Oh, tamping. Tamping.
And that's the return of Kids in Glass Houses!
To quote Mike Patton, what year is this? Yes, our fucking friends, Kids in Glass Houses, are back to do Slam Dunk. And I'm sure they'll do some other shows as well. Congratulations to the boys. I had no fucking idea. To the point where somebody who's a manager emailed me to question if I thought Kids in Glass Houses would get back together. And I said, no fucking chance. So that's made me look fucking stupid with managers. But yes, congratulations to the boys. What a fucking thing. To see the outpouring of fucking love for them, to see them trending on Twitter and stuff was absolutely amazing. I cannot wait for those shows. It's going to be such a fucking brilliant love fest. Well done to Slam Dunk, pulling out the fucking bag again. Kids in Glass Houses and the Academy is.
Yeah, exclusive returns for the festival. But yeah, 15th anniversary of Kids in Glass Houses, Smart Casual. Seeing that they're announcing that they're a thing again, it made me feel like a little kid. And there's loads of messages from people I haven't spoken to in a long time that I used to go to those kind of gigs with and stuff. And I think there's just going to be a lot of love surrounding those shows. But Sean, I've got to ask you this now.
What?
Obviously, it's almost like it's the 2010s again. You've got Kids in Glass Houses back. Young Guns are back. Ocean are doing a show in October. Yumi at Six and Death of Varna are still producing quality music. Yeah. So my question to you is...
Thryzen. Don't forget Thryzen. Thryzen still exist.
When do you think Canterbury are going to get back together?
Oh! Soon, I fucking hope. Oh, get Canterbury back together and support Kids in Glass Houses, for fuck's sake. I would love that. Yeah, over the last couple of weeks, Slam Dunk have been playing games where they've changed their display picture to an all-black thing, and everybody instantly thought, oh, that means the blackout, completely ignoring the fact that Enter Shikari brought out a single called Enter the Void, which starts with a black scene, and then some white eyes come out of the darkness. But yeah, thank you very much for everybody for the love for the blackout and telling us to get back together. It's not me you need to speak to, is it? If you've listened to two or more episodes of this where we've mentioned the blackout, you know full fucking well I never left the band. The band left me.
Oh.
But yeah, I think Slam Dunk's going to be fucking amazing. And this is just the first run of announcements as well. You know, maybe, like Yaz said, the only way is up. Maybe it can get better? Well, Rage Against the Machine will get announced. That'll be good. Who else can we have a Slam Dunk that would be good? Slipknot. What is Slipknot and Slam Dunk? Slamknot. Oh, I'm going to make a band. I'm going to make a cover band. Slamknot.
But it'd be interesting to see what happens with all that. But as well, some quick news for us I wanted to mention is that this weekend, the WWE are in...
Are the Fed?
The UK. They're going to be doing a really big show on... in the stadium in Cardiff, which is very close to us. Live pay-per-view, Clash of the Castle, is going to be shown all over the world.
Nice.
They've only gone and invited us to attend the show.
And what?
Possibly talk to some wrestlers before.
I don't want to do that. I fucking we might hate get wrestling.
Beaten up. We might get beat up, seriously injured.
Yeah. Well, tell you what, today, as we're recording this, I'm going to break kayfabe right now. Okay. Today is not Friday. We're not live when you listen to this, when this comes out. Today, I know, big reveal. Today is Thursday, the day before. And I am going to a WWE wrestler's wedding today. So I'm hoping I won't die. I've literally had my haircut to look like the bit most like a wrestler there. Anybody who knows, give me a follow on Instagram at Sean Smith Sucks. He's at MHRichards_. And have a look at my haircut because I've gone all out childish wrestler. And I've had three lines put in the side of my head like I'm having a fucking breakdown. But yes, as Morgan said, we've been invited by WWE. Triple H texted me the other day, said, Shono, fancy fucking wrestling, eh, Noah? And I ignored him. And then Stephanie McMahon got in touch with Morgan and said, Morgan, fancy some wrestling? And Morgan said, yes. So we're going to go down and hopefully chat to some people. Look, I'm going to put this out in the universe now. I need to meet The Undertaker just so my 7-year-old nephew, Hudson, can have a video because he absolutely loves The Undertaker. He absolutely loves WWE and wrestling at the moment. And all his favourite wrestlers are really tall. So Undertaker's going to be there. I said, I might meet The Undertaker Friday. And he said to me, duh, how much taller is he going to be than you? And I went, is that the most impressive thing about our sentence I've said to you? But yes, so thank you very much to the Fed for hooking us up. That's mad, isn't it? WWE, hooking the boys up. Nice one. Cheers, Trips. Yeah.
So make sure to keep updated with our social media over the week to see what happens with that and when you can expect some of those conversations to possibly come out at Sapling Pod on Twitter and Instagram. And of course, just a quick reminder before we end this to please go and support us via our Patreon page, patreon.com/sapnin. If you've had a laugh during this and just enjoy what we do, that is the best way to support us, keep this going. We try and put as many benefits and bonuses, exclusives, behind the scenes content and all that on there just to say thank you for taking the initiative to support us. And the community of people that have come out of our Patreon is the most beautiful thing in the world. We're going to be seeing some of them hopefully in Cardiff this week with WWE, and just come and join the party. patreon.com/sapnin. And Sean is going to give them a massive shout out to some of the names included in our top tiers of our Patreon community.
Thank you very much. Kylie Wheeler, Mayumi Liwoway, Janelle Castan, Paul Hirschfield, Mitch Perry, Tony Michael, Dilly Grimwood, Kelly Irwin, Emma Barber, Nathan Croshaw, Natasha Morris, Sammy G, Kat Besson, Dana Lasnova, Jenny Robertson, Murray Grimwood, Scott Jones, Kieran Olmey, Amy Dawson, Amy Louise, Tom Owen, Stuart McNaught, Kayla O'Sullivan, Emma Evans Roberts, Caroline Robinson, Kate Puttock, Stephen Aston. Welcome, brother. Thank you very much. Louis Cook, Martina McManus, Danny Eaton, Carl Pendlebury, James McNaught, Jenny Sexy Boy Munster, Craig Harris, Jason Heredia, John and Emma, Emily Perry, Kelly Cannon, Kalila Keane, Adam King of the Goss Parcelor. Happy birthday for the other day, brother. Ollie, Sean, Skater Tables, pass it on, Amesbury. That's in a reference to our wrestling podcast with Tegan Knox or Nixon Newell. Thank you very much. Josh, why couldn't a pirate learn the alphabet? He got lost at sea. Chris. Jesus Christ. Happy birthday. Oh, look what he's done. Thank you very much. Alice Wood. Gary White. Again, get in touch with us. Reese Bowling. Kate Stevenson. Kyle Fatty's Boys. Ooh. The Lewises. Ooh, Fatty's Boys. David Smith. That's a reference to Twin Town. And last but no means least, thank you very much to Connor Lewins and family.
Ooh, love every single person who helps make this happen. That's patreon.com/sapmin. Again, get involved. Thank you to everyone who's listened this far. Thank you, Josh Weller, again, for taking the time and being hilarious and having a good chat with us. And we will see you next Friday and every week with more ridiculous guests, random sentences, and a laugh.
Yes, fucking tidy, man. Sapnin! Lovely.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.